Desert Island Discs.
Mr. Morley, where were you born?
Good gracious, I was born at a place called Semley in Wiltshire, yeah. And named after a sheepdog.
You were, or Semley
no,
were?
No, the dog was... I mean, the dog had its name when I arrived. I was called Bob,
yes.
After the sheepdog.
Mm-hmm.
Very suitable.
Did you see a lot of theatre as a child?
My uncle used to take me to Chuchin Chow. I don't quite know why. And my father used to take me to the Co-Optimist, and I used to go to the pantomime on the pier at Brighton. But I don't think I did go to the theatre a lot when I was a child.
Was there any one particular moment when it struck you that you must spend your life in the theatre?
Ah, yes, when I stopped being a child at the age of 12, or it may have been 13... I managed to get into my public school. This was considered by the headmaster a very great achievement, I think because he'd done most of the common entrance paper himself. And he gave the whole school a half holiday. And I took it that I was then free to do anything. Afterwards we had an argument about it. But I went to see Esme Percy play in Folkestone, The Doctor's Dilemma. And I always remember that because it was an empty theatre and Mr. Esme Percy was pure magic. And it was the most wonderful experience I ever had in the theatre. And I knew from that moment that there was nothing in the world I wanted to do more. And curiously enough, unlike most things that happened to me, I did it. And always, if I have a particularly bad matinee, I try to remember, but usually fail to do so, of that day, and think, well, I must play up because there might be some stupefied schoolboy in row L who wants to go on the stage. But Mr. Percy was marvellous in that play.
Yes. What was your first professional appearance? You went to Rugby.
Oh, I don't think we can go into all that. I played a pirate in Treasure Island. And yes. Mrs. Kerbeleau said at the dress rehearsal, move the fat boy off the stage, he spoils the picture. And I really, you know, it was very naughty of her, but probably true at the time.
Was work fairly regular in those first
days? Oh, yes, those were healthy days for actors. And we used to tour and tour and tour and tour at £4, £5, and £6 a week and live like princes.
You did a lot of repertory at all?
We did our stint of repertory when we felt we ought to improve our standard. But, of course, we weren't serious. You see, the young actors, they're so serious about it all. We never thought we'd get any better, and I don't think we ever have.
Mm-hmm. What was your first appearance in London?
That was a play called Up in the Air, which an astute manager put on 3 times in quick succession round about Christmas, taking it off after the first performance each time and closing on Boxing Day after he'd got the rather bumper receipts, which is customary on that day.
Yes. You and Peter Bull formed your own repertory company.
Well, really, right? Peter Bull formed it. He wouldn't like you to say that I formed it. He formed it and I acted there.
Yes.
But this was a holiday task after we'd achieved comparative success. Yes, we had it at Perrenporth. People used to motor many miles and I sat in the box office and sometimes sold the same seats 4 times older, over.
Was there any one event, one production, that you feel was the turning point in your career?
Well, I wrote a play, you see, and as soon as you wrote a play, they always think you can do something else. And then I was given large parts in the theatre.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get a large part in the theatre, you see, life is much easier. The difficulty is that if you have small parts, you can't really impress the public. But if they're faced with you for the whole evening, then they discover, reluctantly but gradually, facets of your performance and characterisation which they like and grow accustomed to, and they're stuck with you and they have to like you, which is why, you know, a star stays a star, and a small part player, unless he gets the breaks, stays a small part player. It's really lucky.
Well, let's have your third record. What's that to be?
Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. She is sorry to be delayed, but last evening down in Lover's Lane she strayed. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch.
Now, your first play, Mr. Morley, a short story, wasn't it?
The one I wrote, yes.
Yes. Well, that brought you your first success. What was your first success as an actor?
Well, I think it was playing Oscar Wilde at the Gate Theatre. I remember when we had this theatre at Perrenporth, one of the actors was asked to play a small part in the play, and I remember saying to him, very dangerous to play in a play like that, dear boy. And then about 3 weeks later, because the actor who was originally cast fell ill, they offered me the lead. So then I was rather surprised to find him at the theatre, and I said, it'll be perfectly all right when I play Oscar Wilde. So I played Oscar Wilde, and it was perfectly all right, luckily for me.
Yes.
And then I went to Hollywood and did a film of playing the Dauphin.
Your first film and a starring part opposite Norman Shearer.
Well, it wasn't quite my first film, because I'd been sacked from the two that I'd tried to do before, but it was certainly the first film I ever completed.
Yes. And you had also written another very successful play, and a very charming one, Goodness How Sad.
Yeah, but it wasn't very successful, he said, because, you see, actually, nobody has never made any money, but it's a play that all the actors love, but it's a backstage play.
Mm-hmm.
Backstage plays don't do in England.
Well, then, interspersed with films, you had a series of long runs in the theatre. The Man Who Came to Dinner, how long did that run?
2 years. I always ran them 2 years in those days.
Yes. The First Gentleman, in which you played the Prince Regent.
Yes, that ran 2 years.
Your own play, Edward, My Son, you played that all over the world, didn't you?
Yes, I sort of took it round as a sort of caravan to rest in. And I went to Australia, New Zealand, and America with
yes.
it. And the family, and we all had a wonderful free ride.
And the little hut about a desert island. Are you
and
bored?
Hippo dancing.
Yes.
That was perhaps, yes, the best of them.
Are you bored by a long run? Does it worry you playing the same part night after
no,
night?
No, because as you say, I always play the same part. So it's just a question of learning different lines. I don't mind at what stage this takes place, but I'd rather it didn't take place more often than a 2 years interval.
Yes. Now, you could, if you wish, devote yourself to the comparatively easy money of films, but you spend quite a large part of your time in the theatre.
I don't think I could devote myself. I like to hear you say that. It's very reassuring. But I do the theatre because I am primarily, if that's the right word, I suppose a stage actor. Mm-hmm. I'm not really a film actor, but I spiv around in the films and enjoy myself very much.
Let's have record number 4.
Mr. Morley, you haven't devoted much time to writing plays lately. Why is that?
Ah, well, yes, well, that's a very awkward question. I have written a few plays, but they haven't had very much success. They've been tried out locally, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose when we'll get to my age, I'm not driven on by any great desire to assert myself, and it happens that I haven't had anything very much to say. You see, Edward, I had something to say, although everyone took what I had to say quite wrong.
Mm.
But I live in hopes that the muse will strike again, if they...
Is that the way? You're also in management. You present plays.
Yes, that's easier, because you can cast the plays quickly. You say, who shall I have for this part? Robert Morley, yes. Can I get him? Can I afford him? I'll have to pay him a lot. Yes, well, that's all right. And I'm in, you see.
Mm-hmm. What have you been doing recently?
I've been making a lot of films. I can't think why.
Any that you'd like to talk about?
I don't think so.
Have you any particular big ambition that hasn't yet been fulfilled?
I've never had very many ambitions, funnily enough. I don't know why. Some people, you know, get it through ambition and some by chance. I haven't. I don't think I have anything. I've put a lot of goods in the shop window and they've all been bought. I don't know whether there's much more in the shop. I hope so, of course.
Let's have record number 5.
Mr. Morley, is it true that you have on occasion insisted in your contract that there should be no matinees on days when there's horse racing near London?
Well, I've insisted that if there were matinees, I wouldn't have to play on them. But it isn't quite true that I've ever managed quite to do it in London. What happened in Fanny was they cancelled the Wednesday matinee because when I said I wanted to go to the Derby, they said, well, we'll take all the Wednesdays out because it'll save the heating bill. I don't think we were doing very well. When I was in Australia, it is true that I didn't play matinees on Saturday, which is the only day they race in Australia.
Mm-hmm. What is the fascination that racing has for you? Are you a gambler?
I'm a punter. The difference being a punter is a man who thinks he can afford, and a gambler is the one who knows he can't. But I always think I can afford to lose a little, and indeed I do.
Yes.
How many, I love racing.
How many horses have you owned?
Well, I've had 6 or 7, I think. And I've got one now called Just Ennis, who's just beginning his career.
Yes.
They're like children, but of course more expensive. You make allowances for them all the time, so they never entirely disappoint you.
You're hopeful of this one?
Always think I have the next Derby winner. Though, of course, if Just Ennis won the Derby, this would be rather against the breeding, because in point of fact, Just Ennis is a sprinter.